Hi, Mitty.
Michelle, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Welcome back. Welcome to the VIA podcast, presented by VIA Magazine. We cover travel and culture in the West.
I'm excited to dive into our topic today. I hear we are getting out of the car and we're going somewhere else, huh?
Deep into the forest. We're going to talk about foraging.
Okay.
So, Mitty, have you ever gone foraging?
Michelle, absolutely not. Up until probably a month ago, I knew nothing about foraging. Had to do some Googling, and I must tell you, it sounds like foraging is cheaper than going to the grocery store right now.
Mitty, you don't even want to see my grocery bill. I eat from the children's menu now, and they eat from the adult menu.
Which is your truth.
I have three boys. They eat a lot. And I also love to cook, so I am totally down to start foraging.
I think we have the person who has all the answers. Our guest is Maria Finn. She's a California-based foraging guide whose life pretty much revolves around harvesting food from places you least expect, like from the sea, the forests, your backyards, and even the cracks in city sidewalks.
For eating things out of sidewalk cracks. Got it. Maria is also the chef and author of a new cookbook called Forage Gather Feast, 100 plus recipes from West Coast forests, shores, and urban spaces.
You know what? I want to hang out in her kitchen.
Maria Finn, welcome to the VIA podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. And of course, I would love to have you in my kitchen for cooking. It's just, I live on a very small little houseboat, so I have a very small kitchen.
Mitty and I, we don't take up much space. We will just squeeze right in there. Let's start very basic here. What is foraging?
It's a really fun way to have kind of an interaction with nature. So it can be as simple as seeing new fresh pine tips or Douglas fir tips in the spring. That's when the trees are inhaling carbon actually from the atmosphere. It's their new growth. But when you pick those, they're kind of lemony and have a mild piney taste to them. I'll use spruce tips when I'm curing sockeye salmon. You know, we used to do that up in Alaska. So right now in California, we have miner's lettuce, stinging nettles, pea shoots, chickweed, all this beautiful greens. So, you know, sometimes I think, oh, I need to go to the grocery store. Then I'm like, no, maybe I'll just go on a hike and get some of these instead of buying lettuce.
I don't think I've ever had that thought on a hike. But when it comes to foraging, I've heard about it as a travel trend in Europe. Is this something that's relatively new in the U.S.?
What I think happened was COVID, the COVID lockdown, you know, because you couldn't go do much, you were outdoors. And that's when I started my business, Flora and Fungi Adventures. And I have wild food camps in California, off the coast of Washington, and up in Alaska, off Homer, Alaska. And the reason I started those is I lost all my work as a chef and as a writer, and I adopted a dog and I wanted her to, you know, kind of go to work with me. So we started doing outdoor COVID-safe mushroom camps.
I love that.
And people would learn how to cook them over an open fire because, you know, it's one thing to find these wild foods, but if you haven't cooked with them before, you know, like porcini are delicious, but if you have a bunch of the big kind of spores in there, then they can be a little slimy and they're not so great. So you need somebody to kind of show you like, no, take them out if they look like this and cook them without them, or, you know, you can use the spores for stock and stuff like that. So I think that because everybody had to, like, all you could do was go walk, you know, and everybody got kind of interested during COVID, that now it's a really fun way to experience a place.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, Maria, I can see that. People just being tired of being cooped up in the house. So they go outside on this adventure. But what makes the West so special? Tell me a little more about what you can forage for in the West.
Okay, well, the Pacific Northwest, you know, everybody knows about the mushrooms, right? Because there's so much rain in Oregon and Washington. And you have seasons. So you're going to have your fall season. You might have your porcini, chanterelle, hedgehogs. If you're up on a mountain and you get snow, then that season ends. But then the morels start in the spring. And so those often appear in burn zones. And so those move. Mm-hmm. You might have them this year in this area, and then there's a whole different area the next year. So that's something kind of throughout the West. But, you know, there's also the coast. So, you know, when you go to the coast, you can, there's seaweed is really fun. And the great thing about seaweed is none of our seaweeds are toxic on the West Coast. So even if you misidentify a seaweed, you don't have to worry about it. Where mushrooms, that could be a big problem. Mm. Something I'm learning more about that I really love are nuts and ways to use pine cones. You know how pine nuts in the stores are really expensive?
Yes.
And you're always like, oh my God, how are those $60 a pound? Well, you go clean one pine cone and you will learn why those are $60 a pound at the store.
That sounds like hard work.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I'm cut out for this. Make me a believer, Maria.
So can you tell us about your top destinations for foraging? Can you give us a top three?
Well, so Alaska, I lived in Alaska for 9 years, and that, you know, that's my, big part of my heart will always be up there, but it's too cold for my body. Alaska is where I really learned about wild foods. It's just, it's a way of life up there. They don't really even call it foraging. They, you know, the people who live there call it subsistence, but we used to do it for fun. I mean, there's just copious raspberries at the end of the season, and there's all these little pineapple weeds, which are also chamomile. And so I would always go out and I'd come back with buckets of raspberries with some chamomile mixed in. And so that's, I made a recipe for, you know, raspberry chamomile jam.
Wow.
The fireweed up there is stunningly beautiful. It's like head high purple flowers, and you feel like Alice in Wonderland when you're in there. And you can, the fireweed, you can make beautiful simple syrups or like jellies. Homer, Alaska is where I was based, and I really love it there. California is phenomenal. I'm in the Bay Area, and I have a whole menu in my book that you could get from San Francisco, right? So where you could go and you could pick all the greens you want for salads. You can catch Dungeness crab right there off Baker Beach.
That's awesome.
You can catch anchovy and herring right in the San Francisco Bay. So I have a herring run out my back door. So sometimes I wake up to sea lions roaring and seals everywhere and cormorants hitting the water and pelicans, you know, covering my deck. And I'm like, oh, the herring are here. So I have a little throw net, and I, you know, sometimes my cats try to catch them and they fall in the bay and it's a big drama. But yeah, so San Francisco as a city, you know, is pretty remarkable. And then I would say even just outside of Seattle, you can get native oysters there. You can drop spot prawn pots, you know, right out there in the Puget Sound. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure people in Colorado are like, hey, wait a minute. We have porcini covering our mountainsides. So in Arizona, gosh, I'm guessing you guys probably have Nopali cactus, right?
Yes.
And I love the prickly pears on those. But they're hard. I use tongs, I boil them, and they still get those little stickers all over. But they're beautiful color, beautiful flavor. The cactus paddles are delicious and really good for you as well. You know, and then we have all the feral stuff. Like we have fennel everywhere here, and that's not native, you know. And I'm sure everybody's got their kind of weeds gone wild. Blackberries, that's another one.
Weeds Gone Wild, the name of your next cookbook.
Hashtag.
Yeah, so the Himalayan blackberries are everywhere, you know. And so so I think that huckleberries in August, you know, we have them up under the redwood trees here. So really the West, it's a bounty, and it's everywhere. And it's really just a way of looking at the world. Once you start looking, you're going to see little madrone berries hanging from trees. We have a peach tree. I think somebody just threw a pit one day, and it's on the water, and you have to take a boat over to pick the peaches out of it. And it's just this feral peach tree. And there's feral fig trees. And I mean, I went to graduate school in New York City, and I used to see these, my neighbors, these little Greek ladies kind of taking grape leaves off a chain link fence and shoving them in their bags. And I was like, what are they doing? What are they doing? And I'm like, oh, they're making dolmas. That's what they're doing.
So cool.
So sweet. You know, when it comes to foraging and it comes to travel, I wouldn't even know where to begin in terms of planning a trip that includes foraging. So where do you start?
The thing with foraging and going into an area, so you might want to go with a local guide, you know, who really knows their plants, who really knows their fish, who knows their way around. But asking, you know, local people, and people might have walks and tours. There's festivals. So a lot of places have mushroom festivals. Mm. There's going to be, you know, we have a kind of an uni or a sea urchin explosion happening on the California coast, particularly Sonoma and Mendocino. And it's really bad for our kelp forest. So they're not invasives, but it's just an ecosystem out of whack. We had sort of waters warmed up. We had this sea star wasting disease, and they used to eat the sea urchin. And then they died off. And so the sea urchin population has exploded, and it's eating all the kelp, even before the kelp can grow. So they're having festivals up there. Well, you will learn all about them. You'll learn how to you can go forage them, harvest them, possibly clean them and eat them. And so we can actually do this as a way to kind of help with an environment out of whack. you know? So, but we also want to be really sure we don't go into like a marine protected area or a place where indigenous people, you know, use that for their food source, you know? So so you really want to be kind of mindful of where you're going, what the rules are. And so, so finding sort of events, guides, festivals are a really great way. Sonoma has a marvelous weekend-long mushroom festival, and you learn how to cook with mushrooms, forage for mushrooms.
That's amazing.
And, you know, and that's why I do my wild food camps, is because, you know, I'm going on to, one of them is in Lummi Island, and I do it with a man who's a fisherman and a farmer there. And we go out with Moondance Kayak, and their guides know all the seaweed. They know all the shellfish. You know, they are just, they're experts in that. And so that is, if you're completely new to a place, start with experts in the area. Because that's really the safest way to do it. Because you can also get yourself, like if you're from, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest. I did not know what a tide was, right? So I lost my pair of shoes. I learned the hard way when I left my shoes on the beach, right? And then, or, you know, making sure if you're going somewhere where we have drastic weather changes, where it can change 30 degrees in a day, you want to make sure you have the water you need with you, the clothing you need with you. It's really about, really foraging is about the wilderness. The food is like a secondary bonus once you get home.
I want to ask, just listening to you, you're a chef and you're a cook. You know what to do. I do not. I can barely boil pasta. Why should we even go foraging if there's so many rules that we have to follow? What's the benefit of all of this?
First of all, start simply. You know, dry some rose petals, put that in honey. And then when you have yogurt in the morning, you just swirl some rose petal honey in your yogurt. The other thing you have is you have that memory of where you were when you got that rose, you know, and the smell of it. And it takes you back to that spot. So it's almost like capturing this beautiful moment. And if you have children, oh my God, children love it. They love going and picking berries off a tree or, you know, apples off a tree. Mm. Then you can view life as we are here on planet Earth for this limited amount of time. And it's a gift. And the earth is so generous and so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the more we're out in it, it just changes how we live and how we see the world. So not only do we want to become stewards of these beautiful places, it's good food and it's beauty and it's fun and it's free and it's really good for you. I mean, being in the trees, it lowers your heart rate. It lowers your blood pressure, lowers your stress level. It boosts your immune system. I mean, in Japan and Korea, the insurance companies, they cover tree bathing, forest bathing, because it's so good for people. So that's not really cutting into your grocery bill, but you had this great day in the trees and you come out and you're kind of happy and relaxed and a little tired and you got sunshine. And the other thing is it kind of being in nature. So nature knows what we need for our health. Mm-hmm. So when we go into mushroom season and these mushrooms, we need the rain for the mushrooms, but they also need sun. So when these mushrooms are coming up because of the sun, they give us the vitamin D that we're lacking in the wintertime. You know, when the citrus fruits come out, they have the vitamin C that we need in the wintertime. So it's like nature's telling you what to put in your body. And nature's sort of telling you, you know, hey, the world's a really good place. And so sometimes we need that, right? Sometimes we need to be reminded of that.
Thanks for that reminder.
It's different almost every day out there. You see these subtleties in the seasons. I have a full moon kayaking event and we do a local seafood. So people learn about the bay. Mm-hmm. When I'm scheduling those, I have to look at the moon phases. And then when I'm scheduling my seaweed foraging camps, I have to look at the tides. And we just did a Dungeness crab and we had to reschedule 3 times. Everybody was upset, but I'm like, you guys, it's the ocean. You know, we just, and if there's huge crashing waves, you're not going to catch a crab and it could be dangerous. Right. So there's this, you realize that like the rules we go by don't really apply in this other place.
I think you've made Midi a believer. I am a believer as well now. You know, I was realizing though, you talked about citrus and I have citrus trees. Like I'm a forager, Midi. Like I have a lemon tree. I have an orange tree. I have a grapefruit tree. My kids love picking our citrus. I didn't even think of that in the context of foraging. It's all around us. We just have to open our eyes and see it. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm going to ask Midi the question first because I want her to guess the answer before you get to it, Maria. Mm-hmm. I want to know the most common question you get asked when people are out foraging with you.
I bet, can you eat this mushroom? I bet you that is the number one or it's top five. Maria, all of my money, I'm betting all of it. Please tell me I'm right.
You're 100% right.
Yes.
You're 100% you are. No, that's exactly right. And it will be the ugliest mushroom you've ever seen, right? It would be like a Satan's bolete that is bright red and staining blue and mushy and filled with worms. And people will pick it up and come to me with it and go, can you eat it? And I'm just like, look at it. Look at that.
So is that a no?
Why would that be the first thing that you wonder about this organism? And it goes on, and this goes on all day long. I often have wondered about that. Like, why is that people's first question when it comes to a mushroom? And yes, there's something primal in us that, you know, probably when way back in the Neanderthal days, you know, we were like, who figured out how to make coffee, right? Like, who figured out that, like, you could eat the stalks of the rhubarb if they were cooked, but the leaves were toxic? Mm. It just seems to me like if you saw a mushroom and it's, you know, bright red and glistening, and you just look at it and go, I wonder what kind of mushroom it is, would be the first question.
The mushroom has a warning label on it that says, like, do not eat. And then someone's like, can I eat this?
Literally. It's just like...
Yeah, and it persistently happens, and it's
okay. I might be one of those people. I don't know if I should admit that or not, but I think this is a really good conversation about safety, especially because I think the Poison Center earlier this year talked about how they got a lot of calls last year because people were essentially poisoning themselves because they were out foraging with these little makeshift apps. So, Maria, I have to ask you, what is the best way to learn about what's safe and what's not?
I do it as a chef. I'm like, what are the most delicious mushrooms, right? Learn one or two a year really well. Like, morels are crazy delicious, and there are false morels, but they don't look that much like morels. So the other thing you want is go out with an expert and don't have them name every single thing in Latin, but just say, here's what a chanterelle looks like and here's what a false chanterelle looks like. Once you see them next to each other, you've got it, right? And then the other part is, if it's something completely new to your system, only eat a little bit. And see how you do.
That's a good tip.
That's good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. I was out with some friends and we found these big lion's mane mushrooms and they're huge and they're really wet. And I had to go, but my friends stayed and they ate them and they made like these porterhouse sized steaks out of these lion's mushrooms and they all had terrible stomach aches.
Oh no.
Yeah. And they're completely edible mushrooms, but they just were like big and wet and they ate too much and their systems just didn't do well. And so like lion's mane, I like to shred them and make little kind of crab cakes with them and you have a small amount and you see how you do with that. And then if you do well, you can have a little bit more. But I would just say, you know, learn a few really well and learn like one or two a year. Do not use an app to identify an edible mushroom.
Oh, good tip.
Do not use AI to identify an edible mushroom. I was trying to use AI to just get a picture of a porcini and it messed it up. You want an expert. Mm-hmm. You really want a person to see it who really knows what they're doing.
Well, Maria, what should people consider when they're looking for a guide, especially if they're not lucky enough to go on one of your trips?
I think what you want is you want them to be kind of aligned with your interest. So if you're really interested in food, then you want somebody who's going to then have a culinary class. Mm. I know like Swallowtail Tours up out of Vancouver is one that I follow. You know, you go and you forage and then you do a lunch on the beach, right? So if you forage mussels and seaweed, then you'd have a lunch where they would prepare those. So you would learn how to cook it. If you're more interested in kind of just a naturalist hike or, you know, the sort of botanicals, then that's, you would look for that. What you always want to look for is people who just have a deep love and respect for the place where they are.
But if you're traveling to a destination and you are looking to forage, it sounds like a guide is an absolute must. So in addition to finding someone who is has interests that line up with yours, what are some other things that people should do to find a local guide if they're traveling to one of your favorite places, Alaska, Northern California, or the Pacific Northwest, with the intention of foraging?
So if you're going somewhere and you're booking with, I'd say, a very small hotel, or you have a kayak company you're booking with or something like that, ask them to refer you to someone because they'll know. You know, I would look for festivals because those are going to be ways that you're going to get to kind of experience things in a very multifaceted way. You want to make sure you're safe and you want to make sure you have a great experience.
Is there something that we should pack if we're going foraging that would just also keep us safe in the wild?
Yeah. So I would, again, make sure you have plenty of water, bring some good snacks, you know, some nuts and fruits and, you know, dried fruits. I always have like a tin of sardines on me because you can survive anything with a tin of sardines. you always want to make sure, be mindful of ticks. So if you're going into an area that's pretty ticky, you know, have some spray that you can put around your wrists, maybe around your neck. I wear a hat. And I have long socks so that, you know, you don't get scratched, you don't get poison oak. And then carry some like Dawn dishwashing liquid or some Tecnu and wash your hands up when you come out because there can be poison oak back in there.
Great tips. Well, Maria, thank you so much for joining us today. I have learned so much and I have scoured your cookbook. And I will say the recipe I am most excited to try and make is your mushroom bone broth.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And you know what? You can use that for everything.
That definitely sounds good.
You can make risottos and soups and you know.
I plan on it.
Sort of an umami richness and tons of vitamins and minerals. So
Maria, I also want to thank you. I've been taking notes and I've run out of paper. So there is so much that I learned today. And I think the most important thing is that nature is healing. And I think that is just so important. And just to remember, even on those hard days. So thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for being interested in this. And, you know, for highlighting all the great stuff we have out here in the West and travel. Travel makes our lives just richer and expands them in just wonderful ways. So thanks for you guys for what you do.
We recently asked AAA members to tell us about their favorite thing about their foraging experiences.
Okay, Michelle, so this is my favorite part. I hear you got an email. What does it say?
So we have a AAA member named Joyce Glaze. She lives in Alaska now, but she grew up in the 1930s in Virginia. Joyce's email reads, "It was always a fun outing for our family. Sometimes more wild huckleberries made it into our tummies than to the container. We gleaned fieldcress, watercress, wild strawberries, wild huckleberries, and blackberries, and even ate young dandelions. Fond memories for a 90-year-old.
Oh, I love this story, especially the fact that Joyce is 90 years old, sending in an email, and one of her memories is from when she was a child. It just really speaks to how spending time outdoors, especially foraging, they create lifelong memories that you just never forget. And I love to hear that.
I do too. And as Maria said, nature is medicine, and I'm a really firm believer in that too.
Yay.
Mitty, we also heard from a member who is a modern day forager, Jessica Powell, who lives in California. And if you take away just one thing from this episode and her email, it's that you have to be careful when you go foraging.
You know what, Michelle? That is what Maria talked about.
Here's Jessica's email. "Sometimes, just after a rain, I can find oyster mushrooms in the woods nearby. Oysters being the only ones I trust to eat without secondary ID. My backyard is full of miner's lettuce in the winter and spring."
So I'm really happy to hear from this listener.
Yes.
Becoming an expert one plant at a time.
Yes, yes.
I mean, she's careful because it can be scary out there alone.
That's right. And it's always a good idea to start with a guide. We want to thank Joyce and Jessica for their emails, and we want to hear from you. You can email us at viamail@viamagazine.com. That's viamail@viamagazine.com. Or you can call us at 415-475-9350. Again, that's 415-475-9350.
And don't be shy. You may hear your voicemail played on the podcast.
The VIA podcast is hosted by Mitty Hicks and Michelle Donati. That's me.
Produced by Whitney Fanouf, editor-in-chief of VIA. Katie Henry, managing editor of VIA. And editorial consultant Jenna Schnur, alongside Dave Beezing and Jason Jackson of Sound That Brands.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, don't forget to follow and subscribe to the VIA podcast. That way, you'll never miss an episode. Discover more places to travel in the West at AAA.com/VIA. VIA Magazine is published by AAA Mountain West Group.
The views and opinions expressed by podcast speakers and guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of AAA Mountain West Group or its personnel.